I'm Sheila Cast, and this is Midday. Today, a look at the findings of the first ever census of homeless youth in Baltimore and across the state. More than 800 young people surveyed reported that they were either homeless right now or living in unstable housing conditions. Delegate Mary Washington of Baltimore explains how this survey came about and why LGBT youth are especially at risk to be homeless. And we'll meet Laura Law, director of the Youth Empowered Society in Baltimore, a nonprofit center that offers a safe space for homeless youth and connects them to resources that help them get off the streets. We'll also hear the personal stories of two formerly homeless young people who now work with others at risk. It's Midday, right after the news from NPR. Welcome to Midday, everyone. I'm Sheila Cast. Thanks for making time for us today. You know, some of us may be thinking, if a half inch of snow threw us into such a tizzy last night, how are we gonna cope with the blizzard this weekend? And some of us also think, what would it be like to be homeless facing this blizzard? Particularly to be young and not know where I'll sleep tonight or tomorrow night. Youth homelessness is a growing problem in our state, and today we'll hear about the size of this population, what has led to their unstable housing situation, and the risks that they face. Some background. Between the school year 2009-2010 and the one 2 years later, data gathered by the Maryland State Department of Education revealed a 75% increase in the number of unaccompanied homeless students statewide. There were more than 14,000 homeless students enrolled in the 2011-2012 school year. A survey by the Johns Hopkins Center for Adolescent Health identified 640 unaccompanied homeless youth in the city of Baltimore in 2011, a 50% increase from 2 years earlier. Nationally, federal data show that the number of homeless children in public schools doubled from about 680,000 nationwide during the 2006-2007 school year to 1.36 million 7 years later. A lot of homeless young people and a growing problem. To help us look at how Maryland is addressing this issue, we're joined by Ryan Shanahan. He's project manager for two projects out of the Institute for Innovation and Implementation at the University of Maryland School of Social Work. These two projects are called Youth Reach Maryland and Thrive at 25. They're both aimed at preventing and ending youth homelessness. Welcome to Midday.
Thank you.
I'm so glad you're here. So both of these projects aimed at preventing and ending homelessness among young people. What's the difference between Youth Reach? Is it pronounced Youth Reach MD?
Youth Reach MD, right.
Youth Reach MD and Thrive at 25.
So Youth Reach MD is the state's first ever unaccompanied homeless youth count. So this was our first survey of unaccompanied homeless youth. It took place in six regions in the state. And Thrive at 25, specifically addressing youth who are in child welfare. In Maryland's Midshore region, so in Talbot, Caroline, Dorchester, Kent, and Queen Anne's counties.
So, I'm sorry, so Thrive at 25 is when you say in child welfare, we're talking about foster kids?
Right. So we were looking at what kind of approaches can we implement in the Midshore region to prevent youth who are exiting our child welfare system from experiencing homelessness.
So let's focus first on the census. You said first ever. When? When was it conducted?
We conducted it in September and October of last year.
Okay. And what did you find?
So we found, we collected about 1,200 surveys. And again, this was conducted in six regions in Maryland across the state. We did it in Baltimore City, Baltimore County, Prince George's County, the Lower Shore, which includes Wicomico's, Somerset, and Worcester counties, and then Washington County. And we found that of those approximately 1,200 surveys that we collected, 834 were unaccompanied and experiencing either housing instability or were homeless.
Well, Beth, I need to get a picture that when you say that you distributed 1,223 surveys, who did they go to? Who were you surveying?
So we our method for counting youth was to employ what are called continuums of care, who are responsible for planning the array of homeless services in each jurisdiction in Maryland. And they were identified by the authorizing legislation for Youth Reach Maryland to conduct the count locally. We created a survey so that we could better understand what are the characteristics of homeless youth, and then to establish whether or not they meet our definition of unaccompanied youth homelessness. So we had a very rigid definition of what unaccompanied youth homelessness was, and we needed a survey to make sure that those that we were counting met that definition, so we were getting an accurate count of the population.
I want to get straight on a couple of things. If you tell me that you found 800 young people who are either homeless right then or in an unstable housing situation, 800 out of 1,200 young people you talked to? I mean, mm-hmm. this was not a random sample. This, you were going after young people who you thought might be in unstable housing.
Right.
And you found that 2/3 of them were.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned the authorizing legislation. Let's go back to that. How did this survey come to be?
Delegate Mary Washington, who represents a district in Baltimore City, was approached by youth who were experiencing homelessness and were unaccompanied by a guardian, which means that they weren't living with, you know, family members. Brought it to our attention, saying that we don't have the help that we need. We're getting turned away from shelters. We need assistance. This is a population that was being underserved and a population that we didn't really have a good grasp of the numbers of. So the first step in providing them with accurate with services was to get an accurate count so we could effectively argue for services and supports. She passed a bill in 2013, which we began, and we began the project in 2014.
And how often is it envisioned that you would do this kind of account?
Well, we're hoping that we can continue to gain authorization to do it on a yearly basis. We really want to be able to study trends over time in the number of unaccompanied homeless youth.
Have you been working on this issue for a while?
I've been working on it since last year is when I came on. So the Institute at the University of Maryland School of Social Work, where I work, was contracted by the Department of Housing and Community Development, who were named in the legislation as carrying out the count at the state level. They contracted with us to manage and coordinate the count. So that included creating the survey. It included defining what our methodology would be for the count, and then helping coordinate the continuums of care that were locally conducting the counts in those six regions.
That is Ryan Shanahan of the University of Maryland School of Social Work here on Maryland Morning. On Midday on WYPR. That shows you that my head was someplace else. On Midday on WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. Ryan is the project manager for Youth Reach MD and Thrive at 25, both aimed at preventing and ending youth homelessness. What other questions did you ask on the surveys? What else did you learn about who these young people are and how they got to where they are?
Yeah, so that was one of the primary questions was, what is the reason that you're experiencing homelessness? And what we found is that they are generally experiencing homelessness because they were kicked out by their parent or guardian or they left due to some sort of conflict with their parent or guardian. Some left because their house was too small and they could no longer live there. Others because they were experiencing issues with substance abuse. Others because of their relationship preferences.
I want to speak fairly frankly here. We're talking about young people who are gay, and that wasn't acceptable to their parents or the adults that they were living with.
Right.
Okay.
And then others, because they felt unsafe where they were living. Some were experiencing abuse or neglect where they were living and felt they could no longer live in that situation. So it's a myriad of reasons that we see, and this is kind of our first effort at unpacking those reasons and seeing what their characteristics are.
The statistics I cited, including national statistics, indicate a clearly rising trend in the numbers of homeless young people in the last, you know, two, five, seven, however, whatever years one can grab data to look back on. Did you get any sense from the questions you ask in these surveys of why more young people would be experiencing reasons for homelessness now than a few years ago?
It could be because housing costs are rising, and it could be maybe kind of a lag from the recession. We don't really know too much about why they would be rising, but we're hoping that we can just better be able to track it over time and then see what reasons from there.
And in the context of homelessness, when we talk about young people, we're talking about people aged 14 to 25.
We're actually talking about those who are ages 24 or younger.
24 or younger.
Yeah.
Okay. How does their situation differ from homeless adults?
Well, so they don't tend to frequent the same kinds of shelters that adults might visit. Most shelters really aren't geared towards the types of experiences that homeless youth have, so it's not really conducive for them and designed to meet their needs. So we really don't see many homeless youth showing up in our shelters that the adults frequent. And they tend to be more of an invisible population. So they look like your typical teenagers. So they're not necessarily living on the streets in plain view. They could be couch surfing. They could be
couch surfing is probably a phrase we'll use several times during this hour.
Right.
Tell us what you mean by couch surfing.
Couch surfing is living on a friend's or a relative's couch or staying with them because they have absolutely no other alternative, and it's a tenuous living arrangement.
So I interrupted you. You were talking about the challenges of young homeless people compared to adults.
Yeah, so we could see them being turned away from certain shelters, especially unaccompanied homeless young men. We could see them, basically just not coming into view the same way that our older homeless population does. So they're a lot more difficult to find and consequently provide services for. And that's hopefully why that's why Youth Reach Maryland is so historic, is because we are figuring out the best methods for identifying this population.
And tell me a little bit more about Thrive at 25, which operates on the Eastern Shore, mm-hmm. correct?
Yeah, Thrive at 25 is a federal grant from the Administration for Children and Families, Children Bureau. It's a three-year grant where we're working with local departments of social services. So they provide foster care services for youth. And we're looking at what approaches we're implementing approaches to better address four outcome areas. So permanent and supportive relationships, how do we build those? We're looking at employment opportunities for youth. We're looking at how you promote educational activities for youth, and how do you improve the social and emotional well-being of those youth. And those are outcome areas that we see in national research as being essential for preventing homelessness.
The Baltimore Sun highlighted Thrive at 25's efforts on the Eastern Shore. And it's not quite obvious to me why foster youth are at particular risk of homelessness. Are we talking about young people who age out of foster care? Or are we talking about young people who are no longer welcome in foster care, even though they're still young? What tends to be the situation that Thrive at 25 finds?
Yeah, we could see that these youth may thrive at 25. They're typically aging out of the system, especially in that region in Maryland. But they age out into a community that has few jobs available, and they may not have the independent living skills necessary to, even apply for jobs or post-secondary education. So we really just need to do a better job of making sure that they have a strong transition plan in place, and that they are gaining those types of independent living skills that, I was able to benefit from growing up in, with my family, that mm-hmm. these youth don't really have the opportunity, the same kind of opportunity. So we're looking at how can our system better build those skills for them so that they can transition out of foster care effectively and lead stable and successful lives.
Ryan, we're going to take a short break here. Ryan Shanahan of the University of Maryland School of Social Work is manager of two projects that aim to prevent and end homelessness among youth. He's going to stay with us for the hour here on Midday on WYPR. We're also going to meet the director of a place with the acronym YES, the Youth Empowerment Society Drop-In Center in Charles Village. And we'll talk to some young people who themselves have been homeless and are now helping others in that situation. All this when Midday continues. We'd like you to be part of the conversation. Also, if you know a young person who doesn't always have a place to stay, or if you've been there yourself, phone us. Our local number is 410-662-8780, or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. I'm Sheila Cass. We'll be back in just a bit. Welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking this hour about young people without a steady place to stay. They may be working or going to school, spending the night with friends or relatives, or taking shelter in abandoned buildings. Homeless youth do their best to blend in, and often that makes it difficult for them to get assistance they might need. We're talking today also about Maryland's first census of homeless youth. We've been talking with Ryan Shanahan, project manager for two projects out of the Institute for Innovation and Implementation at the University of Maryland School of Social Work. And now I would like to introduce, and I'm looking to make sure I get her name right, Lara Law. She is director of a place with the acronym YES, Youth Empowered Society. They have a drop-in center close to us here at WIPR in Charles Village in Baltimore. Hi, Lara. Welcome to Midday.
Hi. Thank you so much for having us.
So tell us about the center that you run.
So we're Baltimore and Maryland's first drop-in resource center for youth experiencing homelessness, 14 through 25. So we go up a year older than the census. We meet young people's most basic and vital needs, food, clothing, a place to clean up and rest, use computers and phones, get their mail. And while they're getting those needs met, we're working, my peer colleagues and allies like myself, we're working really hard to build relationships with them and make them feel comfortable and be real with them so that they trust us. And that leads to us being able to work together to help them secure short-term housing, shelter, and other options, and also the work on the long-term process of getting employed and getting the benefits they need and getting the into the permanent housing that is going to help them stabilize in the long run.
I'm going to move this mic just a little closer to you. So I just want to make sure I'm straight. You're not actually a place for young people to spend the night. They don't move in with you, but you surround them with all kinds of backup and services and honest conversation about their situation and what to do about it. Is that a fair summary?
Correct.
Tell us a little about the history of the YES Drop-In Center.
A handful of years ago, I was working with the Baltimore Homeless Youth Initiative, which is the coalition in Baltimore City that works around youth homelessness, and tasked to bring young people into the coalition to share their perspectives on what needed to be built out for youth. And in doing so, the young people that I met and built relationships with, they not only articulated what needed to be in Baltimore, but they identified that young people needed to be involved in running it because that was what was going to best serve the young people that would come to the center. They said that we didn't have a drop-in center. We didn't have a one-stop shop resource for young people so that they could go one place and get their needs met. And they didn't have a place where they felt really comfortable and like the people that served them there were going to have their best interests at heart and that they would be able to relate with them and be inspired by them. And so I supported a group of them to found the drop-in center through we benefited from AmeriCorps Public Allies, where several of them became public allies over the starting of the program, and I received an Open Society Institute fellowship to support the center opening. We opened in October of 2012, so we're a little more than 3 years old. Since then, my two colleagues who are here with me today have joined our team.
And let me introduce them. Sierra Dunlap, welcome to Midday.
Thank you.
And Chris Ames. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you.
So I understand both of you were homeless yourself at some point.
Yes.
Yes.
Chris, why don't you tell us a little bit about
my story?
Your story, how you got to where you are now and what you're doing now.
Well, basically, I was living with my parents, and me and my parents didn't get along very well. So,
is that in Baltimore?
Yes. I lived in the county at this time, and they basically kicked me out at like 18, and I moved downtown. And when I was living downtown, I moved in with my friend, but you can't live with your friend forever. So I was working, I lived with my friend, and I eventually moved out of there, and I moved in with a girl down the street. When I moved in with a girl on the street, we got into an altercation, and I broke a glass window, and I went to jail, and I lost everything. I lost my job, everything. So I get out of jail, and I'm like, what am I about to do? So I went to a rehab center. I faked like I was on drugs, and I went to a rehab center.
You faked being on drugs so that you could be in a residential rehab center?
Yeah, so I could have a place to stay. So I did that, and I left.
How long did that last?
Like 2 weeks. You wasn't allowed to have a phone there. And I had a phone. And another thing, I wasn't really on drugs, but I was just there anyway. So I left there, and I was sitting on the steps. I'm like, what am I about to do? Because I cannot go back to this girl house I was just at. So I walked down the street, and I see, healthcare for the homeless. And I talked to somebody, and I just give me direction, different directions. Keep going here, keep going here. So one person told me to go to Yes.
That's so where Yes already existed.
Yes,
so this was about when that you went to
this
the
was
Yes?
About like 3 years ago. I haven't been living in the city long, probably like 5 years. So, where was I at? So I went to Yes, and basically I got everything. I got my ID. I didn't have my ID. I didn't have my social. I didn't have a birth certificate. I didn't have nothing but what was on my back, in my bag.
And Yes helped you figure out how to pull things together.
Yes. Get me on track, for real.
And you have a place to stay now?
Yes.
And what are you doing? But you're still working.
I work at
Yes. And what do you do?
Facility maintenance, get some supplies, keep things clean and stuff like that. But what I want to do one day is I want to give back. I want to be a social worker because I made it out where I was at. And when I was a kid, I didn't have life good, especially being a kid. So I want to be a social worker in the foster care field.
Okay. Yes. Sierra Dunlap.
Yes.
Tell us your story.
Well, I've always had family friction at home. And I was put in foster care for a while, and the foster care system pretty much failed me. They weren't feeding me or giving me any of my proper needs, so I ran away from foster care, and I'm pretty
much...
How old
were you then?
About 11.
Oh, my.
Yeah, and I went to my grandfather's house, and because my mother didn't agree with me living there, she tried to put me back in the system, so... I didn't want to go back there, so I basically couch surfed between family members and friends all my life until someone finally decided to rent to me.
Someone finally decided to...
Rent to me.
Rent to you.
Yeah, so by this time, I'm 18 and...
Did you have a job?
Yes, I did have a job, and I was taking care of myself. And the place that I was living was condemned, so my ceiling fell in, and I had to get out of there, but... The job that I was working, I wasn't making a lot of money, so I couldn't, and I was only 18, so no one took me serious and wanted to rent from me. So I went back to couch surfing and being homeless on the street for a while because I didn't want to be at the shelters because I was so young, and the older guys, like, they prey on younger women, so I didn't want to be there. So it was either a family member or friend's house or somewhere on the street where I felt like I was safe. And,
Then how did you, what happened?
So eventually I hooked up with Yo Baltimore, and they got me an internship where I was working with an independent living program. And I never knew about any resources for homeless youth or anything that could help me out until I started working with this program. And that's when I eventually met Laura through like these networking meetings that were going on throughout the city. And I stayed connected with her along with some of the BHYI members. And once the BHYI members.
BHYI is?
Yes, the Baltimore Housing Youth Initiative.
Homeless Youth Initiative.
I'm sorry, Homeless Youth Initiative. I stayed in contact with them. And once YES opened up, eventually a position was there where they needed a peer case manager, and I applied.
And so what does that mean, to be a peer case manager at the YES Drop-In Center?
I perform normal case management duties. The only difference is I have the same experience as the youth that we're serving. So some ways it's easier to connect to the youth because I've been where they've been. So I know and understand how they feel vulnerable and don't want to just tell their story. You know, it's all about building relationships.
That is Sierra Dunlap, yes, here on Midday on WIPR. Earlier, we heard from her colleague, Chris Ames, both formerly homeless young people, now working at the YES Youth Empowered Society Drop-In Center in Charles Village in Baltimore. Lara Law, who directs that center, is here with us also, as is Ryan Shanahan from the University of Maryland School of Social Work. You can be part of the conversation also. You can give us a call if you've got some thoughts about what it's like to be homeless. If you've noticed young people on the street who seem to not be directed someplace, who seem to be looking for a place to be, what goes through your mind when you see that? Do you even notice them? There's a poster up someplace a poster propped against a building that says if this was a homeless young person, you probably wouldn't even look down at it. So what goes through your mind when you see a young person on the street? Give us a call. Our local number is 410-662-8780. You can send us an email at midday@wypr.org. Sierra, I'd like to get back to your point that you understood, and both of you, of course, understand something about what it's like to be homeless. You've been there. But I'm also curious about whether, when you talk to young people at the drop-in center, whether you're sometimes surprised by what they say or whether you have a different view beyond your own experience from talking to these young people. Not really. Okay.
Well, it's a lot of things that I'm used to, not either because I've seen it myself or gone through it myself, or I've seen other of my peers go through it. So when they come and tell me their story, I'm not like completely shocked. But there is some stories where I'm just like, wow, like, you know, it's really shocking.
Since we're not using names, can you tell me an example of something where even you, with your experience, felt like, oh my gosh, this is worse than I thought?
Sex trafficking.
Oh.
Yeah. I've never really seen it while I was, during my experience being homeless. I've heard stories and everything, but now as a case manager, I'm noticing and understanding that it's an issue. Sex trafficking is an issue.
And that really wasn't part of what you saw when you yourself were on the street.
Right.
Interesting. Lara Law, about how many, how does YES get in touch with young people, and about how many young people show up in a week or a month? Tell us something about the numbers.
YES doesn't have any problems with young people finding us at this point. We could be in a huge community center and probably still have people waiting outside. Young people seem to come by word of mouth from other young people. And so each day that we're open, we see, which is Monday through Thursday for our drop-in center services, we see 20, 30, sometimes more young people. They come in for drop-in.
And 20 or 30 each
day.
Each day.
And so that's, many of the same young people are coming back day after day because it takes a long time to get on your feet, to get connected to permanent housing, especially if there's a lot of barriers. Like Chris was saying, if if you don't, if you come in without any of your ID documents, you can't get a job. You have to go through the process of getting all of those first. And often the young people that we're working with have disabilities or mental health diagnoses, and we have to work really hard with them to get connected to healthcare and to get the kind of screenings that they need so that they can then qualify for the benefits and the housing that they are entitled to. But it's not a short process. We don't use housing first like we like our colleagues in the Mayor's Office of Human Services Homeless Services Program, the Homeless Services Program for the city. I mean, we all know, and the other advocates and programs around the city, we all know that housing first is the answer, but there isn't the public will to put the money into housing first. We don't have that.
Ryan, would you just take a minute, if you can get over to this mic, to summarize for us what housing first means? It's really a term of art in this area.
It's more of a philosophy that if you want youth to be successful, they need to have a launching pad, basically. So we need to prioritize housing for our young people above and beyond other types of services.
So get, in other words, the idea of getting housing first being get someone first into housing and then work on related problems, some of the issues that may have put them in the homeless situation, like a drug problem. Okay, and so that's where, and I will throw this out to anyone, although I'm thinking perhaps Laura is used to answering this question. I hear what you're doing. I hear these great services that you're making available to young people, working through how to get IDs and working through all these issues. And Sierra and Chris talking to young people and in a very frank way. And yet, at the end of the day, at the end of a particular day when someone has just started dropping in, you can't put them in housing. And you can't even put them, you don't necessarily put them in a shelter. I mean, let me ask Sierra, when you're talking to somebody who's homeless and you're working on, you're talking through what their issues are, where do they go then when they leave you? And what do you tell them?
A lot of them go to abandoned buildings because, like I said before, in shelters, young people tend to get preyed on, so they don't want to go to the shelters, and we do not have a youth-specific shelter in Baltimore. So they're in abandoned buildings, or they're riding public transportation all night long just to stay warm. But before they leave, I think we try to focus most on safety. Like, what are the things that you can do to be as safe as possible?
So what advice can you give a young person on that score?
So one of the things that we do is we do give people tokens for shelter. So like I was saying, riding the bus all night long, if it is freezing temperatures outside, you're unable to get shelter for the night, you do not have family or friends where you can go at, then that might be the best thing to do, to find public transportation to ride on. You know, maybe we can support you in that way if we can't support you to get into shelter for that night.
Chris, what kind of advice do you give young people who are starting to put things together in a conversation with you but have no place to stay that very night that they're talking to you?
Like, it's hard to really say because I can't, where can I tell them to go? Like, honestly, I don't have the power to really do nothing. I just go from my personal experience, what I did. I would catch the bus and ride it all night. All night. That's what I would do every time.
So that seems to come through as a...
And a lot of times, like, people stick together. Nobody really got no family there. Like, everybody on their own. Like, I didn't have no family when I first came there. I still don't. But the people I work with kind of my family now. So I just... People try to click up and bond together, and that's probably the best thing you can do for that time.
A lot to think about here. We're going to take another quick break here. We're talking with Sierra Dunlap and Chris Ames, both of whom have been homeless and now work basically as counselors at the YES Youth Empowered Society Drop-In Center in Charles Village in Baltimore. The director of the center, Laura Law, is also with us, and Ryan Shanahan from the University of Maryland School of Social Work. We hope that you will join this conversation, too. If you have some ideas about how we can make this problem get better, what we can do for homeless youth, or why kids end up in that situation. Is there some way we can tend to prevent it from happening? We'd love you to be part of the conversation. You can send us an email at midday@wypr.org, or you can phone us at 410-662-8780. I'm Sheila Cass. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about the issue of young people being homeless in Baltimore and across the state. We've got Ryan Shanahan with us. He is project manager for Youth Reach MD, which conducted Maryland's first ever census of youth and young adults who are experiencing homelessness. Laura Law directs the Youth Empowered Society Drop-In Center in Charles City here in Baltimore. And Sierra Dunlap and Chris Ames, both formerly homeless, they work as peer advisors at the Yes Drop-In Center. I want to stay on this issue of where people have to stay. Ryan, tell us what the shelter situation is. Are there shelters especially for young people who are homeless?
Laura might be able to speak to this better than I can, but from what I can tell around the state, there really just aren't shelters geared towards this population of unaccompanied homeless youth. And then they tend to avoid the adult shelters. So it's we know that there are some in Baltimore City and in Prince George's County, but across the state, it's really a service that's not available for these kids.
Laura, you want to add to that?
Yeah, there is just one shelter for under 18-year-olds. It's called Loving Arms, and we do reach out and connect young people to them when we are working with.
Loving Arms is in Baltimore.
Loving Arms in Baltimore City in the northwest side. But the real problem is that there isn't shelter for the 18 to 24, 25-year-olds. And like Sierra has said, and we hear from young people all the time, they don't feel comfortable going to shelters for people of all ages. And then young people are also at this transition age where they are experiencing independence, sometimes for the first time, and need to be treated like adults, need to be able to come and go as they please, as long as they follow basic, basic sort of house rules. You know, they're ready to have their own room and to not have a curfew and to be respected fully. And, you know, all people experiencing homelessness need that. And then that's one of the challenges with the shelter system in general, that it's congregate for the most part. So people stay together in big rooms of beds and have to be in by unreasonable hours, 3 o'clock for one shelter.
3 o'clock.
You have to be at the shelter lined up in order to get a bed for that night.
3 p.m. You're talking about 3 in the afternoon. You're not talking about 3 in the morning.
No,
you're saying
absolutely not.
3 in the afternoon, you have to sort of... Well, and actually, let me throw a question to Chris Ames about that, because you were talking about the sort of... I don't want to overstate it and say brotherhood, but the connections among homeless young people is somehow how you get through this. So when Laura reminds us that shelters, if you get in one, or congregate, that doesn't foster the kind of lateral relationships that you think are actually helpful?
No, not with a whole bunch of people I don't know. It's hard to just bond with people I don't know, especially we all homeless. And then we one age, and then I'm one age. You like 50 or 40, I'm 18 or 20-something, trying to bond with somebody that age.
Let's take a call from Karen in Baltimore. Karen, welcome to Midday.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you fine.
Oh, great.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I have a quick comment and then a question. I was homeless. I escaped an abusive situation at the age of 17. And, you know, there was nothing really for me. I had no direction. I didn't know where to go. Right now, and I'm currently 48 years old, I have a home. I have a three-bedroom home. I live alone. I would love to help. But, you know, how does the citizenry, just, you know, without starting a foundation of my own, connect the dots about how I as an individual could help, because clearly I have the empathy, and I would love to create a situation where someone can live in my house and maybe, you know, barter by helping out with the trash or walking the dog or something like that.
Wonderful question, Karen. I'm really glad you called, and I'm looking around the room to see who would like to address it. Sierra?
Well, we recently had an idea about our youth being sponsored by people. So either sharing their homes with our youth, or helping out with security deposits or first month's rent. But some of our youth are working, and we try to get them rooms for rent. So even if you are willing to open up your home and rent a room, that would be ideal.
Can the Youth Empowered Society Center help broker that relationship, help put people in touch with each other, and create a situation where Karen or someone else like Karen who wants to be helpful would also sort of have some sense of security about this stranger that they're taking into their home?
Yeah, this is Laura. We've discussed this a fair amount, but we don't have a program set up for host homes, what that might be called. It's definitely one of the things that we're considering, setting up that sort of a program. At this point, I would suggest someone like Karen, if she was willing to open her home, use St. Ambrose Housing Aid Center to offer that, which is one of the places we refer youth, but also to reach out to us and become in our network and do this for now. Do the other part of what Sierra was suggesting, which is sponsor a youth through our program. So she would get a tax exempt write off for any donation that she gave that we would then direct right back out to the youth in the form of a security deposit or security deposit and first month's rent. We are actually embarking on a program this summer where we'll sponsor youth for 3, 6, or if they need it, 9 months of rental assistance so that they can get in that room for rent or apartment first, and then we can work with them on the other needs like we were discussing earlier.
You're suggesting that someone like Karen who wants to help reach out to YES. How should they do that?
They can call at 410-235-7744.
410-235-7744. We'll put the number on our website also, 410-235-7744. Or
our website is pretty easy to navigate, and it's www.yesdropincenter.org.
So all one word, yesdropincenter.org, mm-hmm. is another way to reach out. Karen, I'm glad you called. Wendy is calling us from Western Maryland. Wendy, welcome to Midday.
Thank you.
Welcome to the show. Your comment?
I'm sorry?
Wendy, you're on the air. What is your comment?
Comment is just being a formerly homeless youth that there aren't enough resources even today, and that the resources that are available are extremely limited, whether it be a host home program like I've seen in D.C. or, you know, the ILP, the independent living programs. There's some resources available, but they're very limited. And then, you know, a lot of people are out here. They don't have the skills they need to survive. And those same experiences they have continue into adulthood. And I had a question as well.
Your question?
How can someone become a peer case manager? Do you all offer that same type of, is your program expanded into other parts of Maryland as well?
I don't know, but I'll look around the room and see here who here can address that. Laura?
Not at this point, but you could certainly follow up with us and learn more about our organization and get, you know, be in our network so we can continue such a conversation. And I can be reached at Laura, L-A-R-A, at yesdropincenter.org, or find me through our website.
So, Wendy, I'm glad you called. I wish we had something more concrete to suggest in Western Maryland, but it sounds like you might be the one who could make something happen. And John is calling us from Baltimore. John, welcome to Midday.
Hi, how are you? Listen, I'm from Baltimore City, and I'm aware of the problem that exists with getting youth and bringing them through a comprehensive plan that allow them to transition and be independent. I'm a contractor, and I have licensed electricians, licensed plumbers, master carpenters, and things like this that are all available to help teach people the trades, but we have a problem in finding those people. And one of the problems we have in finding youth is finding youth who are willing to appreciate what those trades can give them and stick with it enough such that they can make it a viable alternative for them. Here's my proposition. I have some people. Hello?
Hello, John. We're listening.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I have some people who have housing that are in one stage or another that they cannot finish because they can't get financing to do it. I have proposed to them, let me buy that housing from you, and you finance it at no interest, and I will use that house to develop the trades and skills for the people who will own the house when it's all said and done. In other words, if I can get those youth to come in and put in the sweat equity, they will be houses that they will live in and they will own, and then when they move out or move on, they can sell their shares like a cooperative, you know, to someone else. I don't have that program all in place, but I'm sure that there's a few legal issues that are associated with that. But I think with the amount of housing in Baltimore City, and I'll give you an example. For right now, I have six houses with 18 apartments that would be available if this is something that could work. But I'm not interested in getting into a legal quagmire, you know, with it. So to make something like that work, I need to talk with your people and see if it's something that they would be interested in putting together.
I'll tell you what, John, it's a fascinating idea. You're right. There's lots to work out that we're not going to get done in the next couple of minutes on this show. I'd like to ask our producer to get your phone number or your email address or something so that we can be in touch with you after the show. And we can also share it with the Youth Empowered Society and see whether something could happen. I really appreciate your calling. We've got just a little bit of time. Jack in Baltimore, a quick question?
Oh, yes. I'd like to make a comment. I represent Remember Me Equality. We are a think tank. The idea you're proposing is if a bill could be sponsored in Annapolis to have MTA vouchers so that the young people could present this card or what have you so they could ride nightly, and maybe that program could be extended to others, but a voucher for the young people or the youth to ride at night.
Jack, I appreciate your calling. Let me find out what people here at this table think about the idea of basically admitting to the world that our plan for keeping homeless youth warm at night is to make sure they have a voucher to ride the buses.
Oh, man, that's awesome.
I'm sorry, Chris, I didn't hear you.
I said that would be awesome if it could be
done. You
think
that's a good idea?
Yes.
I think it's horrible. I'm sorry. I think it's horrible because they should not be focusing on providing bus passes, but instead putting funding into housing first programs.
And I would say we need both. And we don't need the bus passes for overnight, but we need them because, yes, we'll spend $16,000 on bus passes this year. And that's not mostly for overnight. It's mostly for appointments and interviews and getting to healthcare and just keeping up with their lives. And transportation, $4 a day on a bus pass is a huge barrier for youth, especially youth experiencing homelessness. So
we have just a minute left, and I want to sort of look around the table and ask anyone what kind of closing thought you think you'd like to leave with people who maybe haven't thought too much about young people being homeless. What is it you want them to know, or their misconceptions that you'd like to fix briefly?
Well, there are other ways they can help.
Okay.
We always need more resources to get out to the young people, undergarments, backpacks. They could offer their skills or services. They could hire youth themselves in their companies or their nonprofits, give young people a chance that we screen and connect them to. That young people have so much to offer, and we can help them expand their social networks.
Okay, on that thought, we're going to wrap this up. I really am grateful to all of you for giving us some idea of what it is that young people without stable housing are facing. I'm very grateful to Laura Law, the director of the Youth Empowered Society, the YES Drop-In Center, and to Sierra Dunlap and Chris Ames, who work as peer advisors there, and to Ryan Shanahan, project manager for Youth Reach MD, which conducted Maryland's census on youth homelessness. Also want to thank Eddie Zabrowski, Roland Park for providing lunch for our guest today. Eddie's is a full-service market with locations on North Charles Street and on Roland Avenue in Roland Park. Their deli has unique sandwiches and salads, specials each day, all at eddiesofrolandpark.com. And thanks to you, our listeners. Tune in tomorrow for a look at legislative efforts to restore voting rights to ex-felons and an inside look at how the Syrian people are coping with life in a conflict zone. And now, stay tuned for Here and Now. I'm Sheila Cass. Join us again tomorrow.